With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Backpack Broadcasting continues to bring you the best original sports content, but now you can get more of the content you love. For as little as $3 a month, you can get access to bonus content, including behind-the-scenes footage and interviews from the Sports Walk, Sideline Stories, or the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. All this exclusive content comes via Patreon. There are tiered levels of patronage, and each Backpack Broadcasting patron receives exclusive perks. Your support helps Backpack Broadcasting create more of the original content that you love. Visit Backpack Broadcasting's Patreon page and become a patron today. Hard to Tell podcast episode 142. Dexter Henry, Brian Fonseca here. This week we have a guest, somebody who I've connected with via Twitter. We have never actually met in person, although we've spoken multiple times via Skype. DRB Walker, she is a staff writer at Deadspin. Love all the work she does. DRB, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. You know, just trying to stay safe as we are every week. You know, just social distancing, managing through this world of craziness, but we're okay. We're okay.
I got rained on today on my way home. I didn't like that shit. That kind of pissed me off. I forgot it was gonna rain today,
so I gotta get that umbrella.
Yeah. Whatever.
It happens.
So I'd rather get rained on than get COVID. You know what I'm saying?
So, that is true. That is true. You rather have that. You rather have than that going on. So DRB, like I said, we connected via Twitter. I don't know, it was about maybe over a year ago. Been trying to get you on the podcast. Was trying to get you in person to the studio. It just kind of never happened. But we're glad to have you here now. Whenever we have a new journalist on here, we like to ask them just, you know, how you got into the game. How'd you get into the sports journalism game and a little bit about your career? So just let the people know a little bit about that.
Okay. So like Dexter said, my name is DRB, and I'm a staff writer with Deadspin. Prior to Deadspin, I was just a general assignment sports reporter with the Philadelphia Inquirer in Philadelphia. And I was there almost a year and a half. So I was there prior to my time here. And then before that, like, I was in school. So graduated from Syracuse. Had to put that in there.
It's Syracuse.
Then after that, I went a little over a month later, started at the Philadelphia Inquirer. So, my career thus far, it's not that long, but
It's okay. It's okay. So sometimes we have other people here who are like veterans. They have like a longer story to tell.
It just
means you're older. That's all. It just means you're older. You've been doing it for a while. What made you want to get into sports journalism though, DRB? Like, what made you want to do that?
I would say like going back to like high school, like I went to like a big like football high school here in Houston. And so like we went to like the state championships for 5A, like my junior year. And so like watching what happened that year, like that was a pretty crazy just fall semester. We had like a riot at my school. That was just very, it was just a lot of stuff happening. And so watching what happened then to like, then our football team, like going all the way to the state championship, like they hadn't been there in I think like 50 some odd years. We played Kyler Murray's team and lost. So it was definitely a interesting, time like in high school, but that's like what ultimately led to me like wanting to get into sports journalism, just like the stories around that and kind of like the community like coming together, like even though like the situation happened, like I think that was maybe like September was like the scene of like the riot, and so like watching everything that happened in the months after was something that was interesting to me, especially like just given like how big football is down here. So yeah.
Yeah, Brian, I feel like you have questions about the riot. I just can see it all over your face. I see it.
You know me well. I want to know more about this riot and how influential it was to kickstart your career while you were in Houston.
Oh, I mean, I wasn't involved. I was a spectator. Well, I should say a spectator, but I was just, you know, like on the sidelines, you know, watching things happen.
Game or what was it?
Huh?
Just like at a football game or at a pep rally?
No, so this was during like the actual school day. At first it was labeled by like our administrators as like a senior prank, but like we knew, like at least like I was a junior, so like at the time like I knew that it was not a prank, but we had our administrators going out on Front Street telling everyone like, hey, like this is not what you think it is, but it's like, no, like the students, like we're just kind of tired.
What were the students protesting, if you don't mind me asking, if you could say?
It was just like a number of things. Like it was just a lot of stuff happening at that time period. Like administration like was not like our principal, like he was kind of just like a prop in a way. And like we just felt like we needed more, just in terms of like everything. So it just felt like we were in like the thing about like the high school that I went to, like it's like one of like the largest high schools like in the city of Houston. So like we're always sort of like the puppet when it comes to, oh, like this high school is great, like look at this and look at their test scores for this, that, mm-hmm. and a third. And so it was just like, well, you guys are doing nothing for us. So this was like their way and like getting back. But even still, like we had like our administrators like were out there trying to like cover themselves. So,
interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Didn't want to empower the kids to be active, right, for what they want. That's right. Interesting. Sounds like a lot of other things going on in this country.
I mean, I think this happens everywhere, but it's just worse. I feel like when it's like the school that's like always like leaned upon to be like that great, like prestigious place. Not saying that that was like, I guess like our school, I guess like it was prestigious to a certain extent. I don't know how a high school could be prestigious, but they look to like my high school, like to be the staple for everything, like great with Houston school district, like academia. So yeah.
Yeah.
Was Syracuse always the goal from coming out of Houston?
Sort of. So like I was like weighing between like Howard and Syracuse. Like, for some reason, I was, like, convinced that, like, I wouldn't get in there. And so I was like, if I don't, then I'll just go to Howard. And so I visited both of those schools. I like both of them, but I ended up going to Syracuse. I was like, whoop. And then I also have my degree in marketing as well. So they let me, like, double major, which wasn't something – I think I could have done it at Howard, but it wasn't something where they were like, yeah, in 4 years, you could get done with this. So – yeah,
I didn't like that answer.
No. I have no problem. So DRB should know. I have a long running joke with my friend Kimberly Martin. We like to, you know, I like to take digs at her for going to Syracuse, and she likes to take digs at me for going to Pitt. So we're always, it's a friendly. It's not
ACC
bad
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an ACC thing. Going back to the Big East when we were in school, it's yeah. not. It's nothing serious. So I don't, you know, I'm not like anti Syracuse people. So you know, I like you, and I just gave you a little bit of a boo, but it's all love. It's nothing serious. All right. So speaking of colleges,
he hates Duke more, actually.
Yeah, I probably do. Speaking of colleges, right? I reached out to you, DRB, because you wrote this piece for Deadspin, and it was titled Shrugging Off COVID Heart Complications. By Shrugging Off COVID Heart Complications, NCAA has gravely failed its athletes. And there's been a lot going around the NCAA and college football and people wanting college football to return. Before we get into the heart stuff, right? the idea we had another person on this podcast, Jay McManus, who talked about this, but where did you stand at the beginning of this pandemic just in terms of sports coming back and the ability, just not even sport, college sports, but just sports in general? Where did you stand on that? Like, what did you think should or could happen with sports?
I think like back in maybe like March, I was thinking, okay, well, maybe since the virus is like exploding here, like maybe the US would come up with a plan. I was not sort of, I guess like you could say like I'm in tune like with politics, but I didn't know that like it was this bad in terms of like the incompetence like everywhere. And I'm not just speaking at the federal level. Like I know like in New York, for example, like Cuomo has been fairly good in terms of strategy and things like that. But generally speaking, like most of these governors, like they could care less. Like they are just centralized into making money. Like people's lives are just not a priority. And so when I first was like back in March, I didn't know that it was this bad. And so naive me was like, oh, well, by the time, you know, football season comes, like, August, like, that gives us, like, maybe 4 or 5 or so months, like, at least we'll have, like, our situation should be better. It's only gotten worse, but right. I was thinking that it would get better. Like, this is enough time for at least, like, if the federal government isn't going to get their act together, some of these governors will try to piece something together. But, yeah.
I wouldn't even say that's naive, because I mean that was a general thought. Like, we have enough time to get stuff together by the time football comes around. Mm-hmm. And now we're in August and it's kind of like, yo dog, like, so what are we gonna do? And I don't know if we've made any progress on this front at this point right now.
So you talked about DRB, you talked about like local government, if you want to say, and like even governors and that. And it seems like the issue around college football has become so politicized, and it's hard to ignore the fact that it's politicized, right? You've got a lot of people who seem to be on the right wing that are in favor of college football coming back. And it seems a lot of people on the other side not in favor of that. What are your thoughts on how this has all sort of broke out, I guess, in the last month or so, right? Like, everything kind of coming on about this. What are your thoughts on how everything has kind of been really divided on this issue?
I think this was, like, inevitable because, like, at this point, like, I guess, like, a month ago, I just had come to realize that everything in this country is going to be politicized, like, public health is going to be politicized, like everything's going to be politicized. So naturally, college sports, any sport, is going to be politicized. So I guess like a month or so ago, I personally just assumed like we were getting football and that these players were just going to just be at the expense of their conferences and institutions because these people could care less. Like I stated before, I think we could all see that money has become front of mind, not saving lives. So that's been like my general assumption even up until a month ago. So
you would also think that the recent story that came out from ESPN that you kind of touched upon too, that there are the myocarditis, inflammation of heart and reduced lung capacity that they found in at least 5 Big Ten athletes. This was according to ESPN. You think that would have changed some of the ideas or mindsets around it, but it seems like it hasn't. When you look on Twitter and how people react, and we talked about how people reacted to your story, it hasn't changed that. Do you think people are taking any of these health issues seriously as we're starting to learn things a little bit more about COVID-19?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I saw today that the Ohio State quarterback started a petition to get the season back reinstated, the fall season. And I'm just like, do we just not care? Like, I just don't understand. I just don't understand people's thinking processes as I guess like directing like your question to the heart condition. It's not just I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Myocarditis, I believe that's it.
Myocarditis. Myocarditis is the most well-known, I guess, form of this heart inflammation. But there's been other, I guess, heart discrepancies or heart problems with people that have had COVID. So it's not just this heart inflammation that has turned up in COVID recovering victims. So I guess, like, for me, like, you'd think something like this would stop people. I mean, it stopped everyone else in the world. Like, no one else is sort of rushing back to sports. I think New Zealand started sports again, but they somehow eliminated the virus, which you wonder why can't we? But, I mean, I think sort of at this point, it is what it is. Like, we see sort of our leadership, wherever it is, college, athletics, government, whatever the situation is. I think that the Big Ten was sort of forced to as well, because they had those, I think it was maybe like 100 players that signed a petition telling the conference that they had to meet certain health protocols before the players would go out there. So it was a lot of pressure on them even before those 5 students were found to have that heart condition. So, like you see, like, the Southern conferences and the ACC that are still trying to get a season off the ground. And I'm just wondering why, like, because it's like it's worse down in the South. So.
Some are always looking for more sports content, and among the glut of sports media, some are looking for sports content that dives a bit deeper and doesn't just stick to sports. So check out Backpack Broadcasting's original long-form sports journalism series, Sideline Stories. The award-winning original series takes viewers directly into underrepresented communities within the world of sports. It's a series that goes beyond traditional sports reporting, like box scores and statistics, presenting exclusive stories that you won't find anywhere else. With a diverse group of correspondents, the series provides interviews and interesting stories around the world of sports, because there is so much beyond the game, and so much that occurs off the field or court that impacts each of us and the world we live in. Giving a voice to athletes, coaches, fans, and everyone involved in athletics, Sideline Stories looks to push sports storytelling further than ever before. It's a winner of the 2020 Independent Shorts Awards, and all episodes of Sideline Stories are available for viewing today on Backpack Broadcasting's YouTube channel and Facebook page. That led to my kind of next point. I know Brian and I have been wondering about this, right? So Big Ten is out, mm-hmm. Pac-12 is out. Mm-hmm. How are we having any kind of a college football season, whether it's the SEC or the ACC? Money. And it is money. Yeah, the answer is money, as DRB said right. before, right? The answer is money.
Always are the root of this. Yeah.
Always. Yeah.
Right. But I guess my question then is, how can, and I guess we could also throw the Big 12 into this too, right? How can the presidents of these universities, the athletic directors of these schools, mm-hmm. they've been very silent. We haven't heard anything from them. I haven't heard anything from my school, University of Pittsburgh. You haven't heard anything from Syracuse. We've heard nothing.
Yeah. I mean, Syracuse's AD, I think, spoke out like a couple of days ago.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, because they were saying something about like non-conference games or something to that extent. And he said that non-conference opponents have to go through certain protocol before they can play and compete against like our athletes. So I don't even know what the extent of the regimen is. I think I wrote about this maybe like a month ago at this point, but as it pertains to the regimen and the expectations that the NCAA has put out there, I think even Syracuse pointed to this, they're only testing players 3 times a week, and I still think that is not enough. Like, especially when you think about the fact that you can literally be carrying the virus for up to 14 days before you test positive. Like, that in and of itself doesn't make sense to me of why there's not testing at any given point. Like, over a 48-hour period, they could interact with 10 people and then have a positive case. And then what happens? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's unbelievable the SEC has been, and ACC and Big 12 have been this quiet. Yeah. Now we saw Oklahoma. Brian, you saw this too. What, they had 9 yeah. players test positive, and they seem to be trying to kind of sweep this under the rug as if it's, oh, this is just nothing that happened.
Well, and yeah. you have other schools telling players that, yo, don't report your symptoms. Like, we just want you out here playing. We don't care. You know what I mean? Like, we have that going on as well. And it's like, I think at the very least, teams should be just delaying the season until the spring, because maybe you'll have football
spring?
In the spring.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I wrote something yesterday about the spring season. I was sort of like just fishing around, like asking agents, like NFL agents, like how this would impact them, like leading into the draft. And like agents were not fond of a spring season. They were just saying, you know, like, this is just not a good idea. One of them said that like it would just be better off if players like that either are intending on going to the draft, but they might have like another year of like eligibility, like somehow like they should put this off until next fall. And if they have to leave now, and they have to enter the draft, just go straight into the draft. Like, one of the agents that I spoke to, he said that, like, your draft stock might drop, but if you're predicted to get drafted, just go ahead and declare for the draft. Like, don't participate in a spring season. And so I thought that that was interesting too. I don't even know if we're even going to have, like, the anticipation is that we would have a vaccine by the spring. I don't know if that's even going to happen. So I think, like, there's also sort of uncertainty on that front of, like, well, if it does come to February and there's still no concrete vaccine that's out there that could actually prevent the virus, or prevent you from catching the virus, because 50%, I guess, like, shieldability, I don't understand, like, the purpose in getting that vaccine, because that's currently what's being tested here in the U.S. So I think personally that we're just going to have to see. Yeah, so.
Pretty much. What's been, in your reporting, what's been the anecdote that has surprised you the most in covering all of this? The thing that you've heard that you were like, wait, what? Like,
I think first, I guess, like, I could just go back to, like, the story, like, that I even, like, reported on yesterday. I think, like, first, like, I was just, like, confused, like, when the agent first told me, like, no, like, a spring season is just a bad idea. I was just like, could you explain, like, why? And then, like, he, like, ran down, like, what exactly happens, like, during that spring time period, whether it's, you know, like, the pro days are usually February and March. And then it's like, so that's when a season is. And then when you start going through it, the combine is late March. And then when you start, like, moving through things, it's like, oh, and the draft is in April. So it's like all of that, like, that timetable of a season on, like, layered on top of what already is happening during that time period. I think it's just very absurd. Just to say, oh, we're just going to slab a season on top of that. Like, I don't know how that's even feasible. So
I don't know how any of this is feasible right now, yeah. To be totally honest. Like, I don't know how life is feasible at this point right now.
So DRB, there's the other side of things. If, you know, just to be fair, there's the folks who say we need college football, right?
Really don't.
There are college towns, small college towns, where a lot of the economy in those towns are dependent upon the schools that are there, right? And sometimes those college football programs. So those people say, we need college football back now. It has to happen. What would you say to that?
I would just tell those people, like, please just do a little Google search to see what are the side effects and or residual effects of catching COVID? Because I don't think people really know. Like, they've taken what Trump has said as it pertains to younger people and actually, like, taken it at face value. And it's like, yes, younger people are surviving COVID, but they don't even know what their quality of life is even going to look like in a month, 2 months, 3 months. So I just think that, like, all of this, a lot of it has to do with the fact that maybe, like, a lot of, like, the, I guess, cable news that people are watching, like, it's not as much of an emphasis on what's been happening to individuals once they've catch COVID. A lot of these people are avid cable news watchers, and that's not, like, personally just watching, like, that's not what's being talked about. But just simple Google search of, like, what these side effects are would actually help inform people's opinions on this virus a little better. It's not the flu. You're not going to have a heart condition if you catch the flu. So it's just, like, simple things like that where, like, you're not going to have lung damage if you catch the flu. Like, these are simple things where it's, like, when people tell you this is, like, the flu, you can just say, I don't know about that, because this is not something that you would get as a residual effect of catching the flu. Like, yeah, so.
It's amazing we still have to even explain that to people at this point. Like, right. I find it absolutely amazing. A couple more things. What did you make of the players sort of uniting together? Because I was kind of encouraged about that at the beginning, especially what we saw out of the Pac-12 and the players from the Big Ten, and then everybody sort of coming together. I'm actually surprised there actually hasn't even been more of a groundswell in places like the SEC and ACC, right. But the players coming together, was that an encouraging sign to you that, like, we might be able to put a stop to this season, college football season being played?
Yeah, I mean, I think what the Pac-12 players did, I think, like, we and the media just has, like, spectators and watchers of this, like we've been sort of saying for like a while, is like these players can really determine if we have football or not. Like if they together say, I'm not comfortable playing, like this virus is still very much so pervasive and I don't feel that us testing 3 days a week is sufficient for me to compete out there. If they made that call and decided to sit out, what are these schools going to do? So, I mean, I guess they could rip their scholarship. I mean, you'll need them in terms of the talent on the field. So it's just for me as a person watching, it's just like, thank you, finally. And then the Big Ten sort of followed, not as aggressive. I think the Pac-12's list of things came out of, I wrote about like a new study that came out sort of dispelling how much money is made in like college football and sort of how much money, generally speaking, a like average college football player, depending on what conference they compete in, would make. And so they used that study to sort of formulate their list of demands. So they were asking for a lot of other things, even outside of football players. Like they were wanting to make sure that sports were not cut and sort of the endowment from the university, for example, I think they used Stanford, would like cover sort of that would cover like sports that were non-revenue generating sports so that they wouldn't have to be cut. So they had like an entire list of things in terms of things that they wanted to get met. I don't know if they'll get all of those things, but I think it was just nice to see the Pac-12 be the first ones to come out and say, we're not playing. Like, so.
Have you heard anything? I know we're obviously talking about football because it's in the fall, but we're soon going to be at the point where we have to start thinking about how this is going to affect college basketball. So have you heard anything on that front in your reporting and how that could potentially push back like the winter season and anything of that nature?
Right. I mean, you know, like Rick Pitino, I know people don't like him, but
he looks like a vampire.
For deserved reasons. But he released like a tweet, I want to say like it might have been like a month ago. He was he was telling the NCAA like, you know, it would make sense like if we just didn't play until a vaccine came out. I think he suggested like the season start in January instead of, I think they normally start late October with scrimmages and then the season starts in November. So I presume that basketball will not start before January anyway, since fall sports, especially for the Big Ten and the Pac-12, are canceled. Well, I shouldn't say sports, but in terms of football, like that's canceled. So I presume basketball just naturally will be pushed back as well. But I haven't heard anything specifically for that yet. We still haven't gotten a NBA draft yet. So that's a whole nother.
That's right. October.
So
I think that's October as far as
scheduled from it's scheduled for like mid October after the finals. Woo, supposed to be done.
We're cutting it close everywhere.
Yeah,
baby.
We are. We are. So guys, what's interesting with this, and Brian, I was talking to you about this earlier, the NCAA chief medical officer came out and said in an appearance on CNN, he said, there's no way we can go forward with sports. Everything would have to line up perfectly. DRB, I feel like that kind of lines up with what you just said in terms of that it doesn't look like we're going to have sports. It looks like it's pretty bleak. I was surprised that somebody from the NCAA or involved with NCAA actually said something about this, because they've been pretty quiet on this. I'm talking about as a governing body.
Have
you been shocked at this silence of them? I don't think I'm not, because we know they don't care about college athletes.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
yeah.
I think it would be naive for us to like think that the NCAA at any branch is caring about the safety of these athletes and opinion. Like they're thinking about their bottom line. And so that's the biggest thing. I mean, like, I'm surprised. I didn't know that the chief medical officer actually came out on CNN to say that. But that's good that he came out and said it, because I think that people, like, even after, like you said, like the ESPN story of those five Big Ten athletes, like, I think that, like, people are kind of rethinking, not people, but I think, like, just generally, like, folks that are working in athletic administration are thinking about what is this going to mean for us 2 months from now. And I think like the point that you made about Oklahoma, like the 9 positive players, like I think that they have to be thinking too. Like I know this hasn't happened and it hasn't hit their campus, but like they have to be thinking about what's going to happen with these nine guys, like in terms of what is their health going to look like in 2 months. Like, so I don't know. I think this whole thing is just a mess. When you look at Michigan State and Rutgers, their entire football teams had to quarantine for 2 weeks. I'm just like, this can't happen during the season. Like, I don't know how you're going to quarantine an entire team. I see it's happening with Major League Baseball too, but like, how are you going to quarantine an entire team for an extended amount of time? Like, that doesn't make sense.
And unlike the professionals, the players aren't getting paid to do this.
Exactly.
So it's like, what are we really putting them through? You know what I mean? Right. Just to generate revenue for the universities.
I think
Rutgers is another one. I read that. I was like, God damn, son. Positive tests on Rutgers.
That's the thing I have a problem with, right? We have, to take it out of the context, guys, not just in college sports, but also just, we all went to college and we've all been on campuses. And I'm not even sure the students should be there, the general student body. These are athletes that play sports and then come back to campus and mix with this general student body and then are going and practicing and playing this very close contact sport and then potentially traveling again. And I think it's on the adults, the presidents of the schools, athletic directors, et cetera. It's on them to protect these students. And it seems like nobody's really stepping forward other than the students themselves, the student athletes themselves, to protect them. And I think that's what's just really disappointing.
Right. I was going to add too, I don't know like if you guys saw this, but the University of Georgia, they were having a massive outdoor / house party last night and it was packed. And I was just like, I don't know what country you guys are in. I don't know what part of the planet you're in, but there's still a pandemic going on. So I'm just confused. And I think that it also makes me wonder when Nick Saban came out and said that, you know, the players are more safe here on this campus than they are back at home. I'm just like, well, actually, when you think about college campus culture with respect to a contagious virus like COVID, I would think that it's actually worse for them to be on campus. Like, they're interacting with way more people. I think like you have a lot of these schools too that have decided to go to just online classes. I don't know what the deal is with Georgia because it looks like the entire student body has returned back. So I'm just confused about everything.
No, DRB, you make this good point, right? And I think the point that you're making is somewhat that in a college campus culture, students are going to be students. You can't expect the students to not be students. They're going to be out there hanging with each other, drinking, engaging in other activities that we all were around or part of at some point in college. You can't expect the kids to not be the kids. It's around on the adults. It's funny. On the adults to protect them from that. What'd you say, Brian?
I said around or a part of is funny.
Yeah, around or a part of. I'm not saying everybody partook in everything. I'm just saying this. We all went to college. We know kind of what goes down in college. And come on, it's got to be better. All right, before we get you out of here on the college sports, how have you been shocked with the NBA has gone pretty well so far in the bubble before they start letting families and stuff in? And baseball,
that will be interesting.
That will be interesting, right?
I'm going to watch that because that's going to be interesting.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, for other reasons too.
For many other reasons. I think, we can see things get a little messy.
Families are going to be coming into the bubble, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A certain player's going to have more than one. Like, that's the shit I'm going to be looking for.
When you look at that, you brought up baseball, DRB, and talking about how that's been a disaster. It's been a mess.
It has.
The NFL is trying to play, which I think is also quite ridiculous. Although
Jerry Jones said, we get fans in Dallas, boy.
Which is crazy. Yeah. And I've spoken to a couple of people who cover the NFL who told me, look, this is going to – they're going to try to make this happen – as best as they can. They're going to at least give this a good shot. Do you think the NBA is okay? Do you think the NFL is crazy like I do for even trying this? Like, what do you think about the way major sports is as a whole in going forward and trying to play through this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, like, the NFL, I don't know. Like,
that's a perfect answer, honestly.
I mean, like, if you're the NFL, like, you see what's happened in Major League Baseball. Baseball is not a contact sport. I mean, like, I guess theoretically it is, like, you do interact with people, but, like, generally speaking, like, you're not regularly interacting with people. So, like, when you see entire teams having to quarantine or entire teams that have to take a bus across the country because half the team's infected, like, I just don't know how this is even going to work. And I think that this is really sad that it's like, let's see how this goes, because these are, like, people's lives, and it's like I said, like, people don't know what their quality of life is gonna look like after this virus. Like, that's the biggest thing of, like, speaking to, like, doctors. Even Mark Hamilton, like, he's a former Cardinals player that I spoke to about this. It's just, like, and he's now a medical doctor. So for him, it's just like watching this, it's just been like, okay. I mean, he said himself, he's like, you know, this was before baseball actually got back going. He was like, you know, baseball might be able to work, but like a sport like wrestling, that would definitely not work. And like, I was just like, I mean, yeah, I mean, football is sort of in that same category of like, if you're a lineman, like you're literally breathing on like the person on the other side of you, like throughout the game. So like, I just personally don't know how this is even going to work. I hope that the NFL is learning from Major League Baseball, but I don't even know what there is to learn.
Yeah, right.
It seems like they have like the right protocol in place, but it's like, either players aren't following it or they're still catching it. Like, you have the situation, I think it was like the Indians, I want to say, like their ace, I believe. I don't remember what team he's on, but he tried, or I think two of their friends, yeah, tried to sneak out.
Yeah.
And like, they got caught because they're like, well, why are you trying to, you know? So it's like simple things like that where it's like even the players aren't even taking the protocol seriously.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know how that's supposed to work.
See, that's the thing that you run the risk of, especially when you don't have a bubble because you have so many people there. It's like, we're all not going to follow the rules because some people are going to think that, and a sport like baseball, which is heavily populated one way, you're going to have a whole bunch of people that are probably going to think a certain thing about the virus and not take it that seriously. And then all it takes is one to bring it back, which then becomes 10, 20, 50, and then all of Major League Baseball has COVID. And the NFL is going to be interesting because there's 100 people per team traveling. In terms of like players, staff, coaches,
and all those people.
So,
and like, I think like right now, like the thing with the NFL is like right now they're testing every day, but according to their agreed upon terms, and I got like a notification like from the Players Association, like they said like they asked for the time period to be extended because at first it was only supposed to go like daily testing was supposed to go for 2 weeks and they were supposed to see the positive rate. And I think the positive rate was like a little over 2%. So they continue to do daily testing. And so I was just like, is there something else to this? But it's not. But I'm just thinking like, you know, like when the season gets started, like right now, players are not really interacting with folks that like they aren't seeing on like a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Like, think about it from the standpoint of like when games start, you're flying to different cities and you're interacting with players that aren't that you aren't seeing regularly. How is that supposed to work? Because I can only see that as being a disaster, just generally speaking. I think the point that you made too about 100 people flying on a plane together to these different places, like, I mean, if you're not daily testing, like, I don't know how this is going to work. And even when you are daily testing, you still are going to have folks that they might test negative and then turn up 2 days later and test positive, but their interaction was from 3 days ago. Like, it's just like things like that where it's just like contact tracing, like they don't even have a plan for that. So it's like, I don't know how this is going to work.
Yeah,
that's kind of frightening and weird. So,
and that's something I was going to bring up too, because it's like, we don't know where certain dudes were at the night before, or certain people were at the night before the game starts. You know what I mean? Like, we just don't. There's just so much uncertainty surround it. And, like, they don't have a bubble situation. And they're not going to put one together because it's too late. So, I don't know. We're gonna just see madness.
Yeah, and in terms of that, before we wrap this up, the madness that I'm concerned about, guys, is – and this is kind of even more so on the college football front – is – you know, what's it going to take for people to wake up on this? And sadly, I have to say it, is it going to be an athlete severely becoming ill. I don't want to go as extreme to death, but that's obviously a possibility here. We've seen people die from this.
But
right, you know, or is it even something like, because I think what a lot of people do is they make this either you die from this or you don't. And I think what we've been talking about, what DRB highlighted in her piece too, is that we have to look at the complications that could come from this right after. Mm-hmm. So what happens if we find a prominent athlete has COVID-19, whether it's college mm-hmm. football or NFL, and then they get back out in the field, and then we realize they collapse or die in the field because of lungs, their lung was damaged, or their heart, yep. they had heart failure, and those things are then, through an autopsy or whatever, is then linked back to COVID-19. What I just laid out is a real possibility.
It is.
Why, I guess the question I have is, from what people you've spoken to, DRB, why would anybody, even around college football, want to take that chance? Well, you know what? I just answered my uncle. You know what the answer is.
Yeah.
Money. It's money. It's money.
I think we all know the answer to that. Like I stated earlier, these governing bodies, they only care about one thing, their bottom line. So it's just like you would think that they would care about the folks out there putting the product out there on the field, but that's not what the concern is. And so, I mean, generally speaking, like the average person would care about these things because they're pretty important. A lot of folks that are turning up with COVID are people that are having some level of lung damage, whether it's their lung capacity has a significantly smallened or whatever the case may be. You are having certain things that are happening to you that could affect your quality of life going forward. So even if it doesn't take death, I don't understand why there's chancing like this. But then I also have to remind myself that money is what this country is about. Whether it's governors that don't care because they want their economy open, or the NCAA trying to still have Division I college football, like they all have the same key sort of think process, I guess, if that's the right way to put it. So
sadly, yeah. They do. It's really sad. DRB, thank you for your time. We appreciate you finally coming on here. We hope the next time we talk to you on here, it's about something a little happier,
a little bit
more optimistic.
Hopefully COVID, I mean, this might be even like too far-fetching, but hopefully we have something soon to mitigate this, because it's just disheartening some of the times.
it really is. Thank you. You can check out DRB's work on Deadspin. She does a great job in all the articles she writes. She also was part of my Sports Voices Matter piece that came a couple months ago. Yeah. I interviewed her for that. She was great on that. So definitely check her out there. DRB, be well. Be safe in Houston, all right?
Yes, thank you. You guys do too.
Thanks so much. One time for your mom, one time. One time for your mom, one time. One time for your mind this week, we're not going to have two different things we talk about. There's only one thing to talk about, and that's because we are a couple of days away from a new Nas album, King's Disease. If you're watching this podcast and you can see that Brian is smiling like crazy, he cannot hold his excitement in. But what Nas gave us recently, Friday, before this podcast dropped, he gave us the first single off of this album. And we knew the title a couple days before. It's called Ultra Black. It was blackety black. And it was exactly what you thought it would be, at least for me. You know, this album is rumored to be produced entirely by Hit-Boy. Hit-Boy produced this track. It's just a song celebrating Black Pride. Yeah. Real Ultra Black that even got one other rapper pretty mad.
Air quotes, Dexter.
And air quotes there. Pretty mad. And if they're mad, so be it. I like this song, man. The song is jamming. It's a good vibe. Even if you're not black like Brian, yes, you can still enjoy this.
I said as much at the end.
In the last bar. Yes, he did. And I think it's a really good vibe. It has me really hyped about this album and excited about what Nas is going to talk about. But what was your first reactions to this song when you heard it? I know we texted. We both made sure after midnight we stayed up and listened to this. So, yeah.
And that was the night that I actually wanted to get to bed early, but then I was like, wait, nah, I can't wait till the next morning to hear this. I got to see what's going on. Because as much like Nas is as sure of a thing over the course of hip-hop history to me than, you know, most other artists by comparison, just going through, like, he's had great songs basically each decade that he's put out music. So I'm looking at this like I'm just hoping he doesn't get a little experimental, because at times when he's done that in his career, we have gotten Zone Out, which we've talked about in certain other things. So, and Nasir. But for me,
how about let's just think back to a little bit over a year ago when we heard the first thing released for the Lost Tapes 2, which was that Ja Rule of Rap?
Yeah.
Nas, why did you do it?
I don't know why that was. I don't know why that was on a Lost Tapes 2. I don't know why that was the single. For me, I would have probably just put out No Bad Energy, the Lost Freestyle. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I don't know why that song was created. That'll go.
Yeah, but for me, I was. That's what I was. And part of it was that. I probably should have led with that. Like, I was just hoping, like, yo, just if Nas just if he just if Nas could just be Nas, then we're gonna get a great song. And I feel like we got that. I feel like we got that. The sound, I don't know what I was expecting before, but the sound caught me a little off guard when I first heard it. Like, I felt like I didn't see that beat coming. I didn't think it was going to be as mellow. I kind of thought Ultra Black was going to have a more aggressive tone, but I actually liked that. It was like, it was kind of a song that you would two-step to with a drink in your hand. You know, it was like some grown folks bop to it. Like, I really liked it.
I literally tried to picture you doing that. That was hilarious.
for
many reasons of why that would not be, but yes.
Yeah.
We've talked about some. Yeah.
Nor am I that much of a dancer. Yeah. But it's a very good song. There are some track lists being floated around in the ether, which I think we can talk about as well. I don't know if any of those are real.
I think they're not.
Yeah, I don't know. They seem plausible, but they also seem like, oh, I could picture Nas with this person. I think you brought this up when we talked about it the other day. Like, oh, I could picture Nas with this person, so we're just going to put it here. The song titles even sound like things that you would put in Nas record, so it's really elaborate. If they are, though, if they are, Nas and Anderson .Paak has to happen. So if they are, I hope that that is the case. But, nah, really good song. The Doja Cat line, I don't even think it was as malicious as people are making it out to be, but who cares? For, you know, fuck Doja Cat and her fan base. Who cares?
The line, for people who don't know, is unapologetically black. Let me pull up this line because I forgot exactly what he said, but he's basically saying he's the opposite of Doja Cat, who's had a lot of problematic things. Being anti-black.
That's the other thing. I was like, her fan base is like vehemently defending her, and people are saying, "Oh, it's whack that Nas would go after a young woman or whatever the case may be," and it's like, do we not know about her history? Like, do we not, know about how she got problematic to begin with in the first place? Like, who cares, man? And then people were pulling up numbers like, oh, Nas is sick because he has 26 million less monthly listeners than Doja Cat does. How about listeners over the course of an entire career? Like, what do you mean?
Numbers is just a weak argument. And the line is, we going ultra black, unapologetically black, the opposite of Doja Cat. Listen. It's
apologetic. About
you know. Unapologetically black, which is what this song is. I think people get way too sensitive about anytime somebody mentions everybody's name, and it's not a diss. Nas names plenty of other names in this. He's just saying he is not going to make excuses for blackness or be anti-black, which Doja Cat has done at times, and coming at the hairstyles of black women and other things like that. So she is half black, but hasn't sort of presumed to embrace that all the way. And so there is a lot of anti-blackness going on. And so I think that's a lot of why this song is being made. I don't think it's necessarily a diss. It's just pointing out to something that's, it is what it is. It's like if somebody says today, 45 is a racist. Like, yo, we know this. That's not a diss. That's just me being like, we know
Ether
this.
Ether is a diss.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, don't body yourself is a diss.
People are so hungry for like disses sometimes in hip hop, where it's like, yo, y'all reaching, man. Like, y'all doing a little too much. Like, just calm down. Like, ain't nobody trying to hear no Nas and Doja Cat battle. And not because,
Yo, nobody's trying to hear that. Nobody asked for that. I don't even know why I was going to try to explain that. Like, nobody asked for that. Right? Like, nobody said that they wanted this. And you know who knows they don't want it? Doja Cat. She, you know what I'm saying? She knows this. So, come on. What are we talking about?
It's a very good record. I'm glad it came out. It also caught me off guard, like, that being the first single. I'm curious to see, like, what, like, where it'll, now is the test, right? Like, where is it going to be sequenced in the album? Is what I want to see, because I remember Life is Good is, of my lifetime, the Nas album I anticipated the most, because I was coming off the Khalees divorce and all the stuff that happened there between those two, and I was old enough to where I felt like I had a good enough ear to expect certain things. Nasty had come out the year before, but we didn't really know, like, it was going to be on the album.
Yeah, it was just Lucy, yeah.
So Lucy that came out, fire record. And I think the first, like, real single was The Don.
It was.
I think it was The Don. And when I heard that, saw the video, saw that it was produced by Heavy D, who had just recently passed at the time, I was like, yo, son, like, this album's going to be crazy. And it was. It's to me, Nas' second best album.
I was just listening to it the other day, and it's sonically, I love the sound of that album a lot. Very cohesive in terms of sound, the producers, Nas workers. So Brian and I spoke about this the other day about, you know, rappers who lock in with one producer, and we probably will see this on this album, at least it appears so, with him and just Hit Boy. So I'm intrigued with that. The name of this album, King's Disease, has me very intrigued in terms of, is Nas going to be talking about greed, maybe the, you know, the desire for more that we see, especially around capitalism and everything that's going on in this country with health. I wonder what the focus is going to be in this album, because I think when Nas gets focused on a concept and really good, as we saw with Life is Good, the celebration of life, even though there were things that had recently gone on in his life that made it challenging, there was this kind of message throughout the album of that, you know, there's things you can enjoy and things that he was taking time to enjoy. So it's really good. I expect him to talk a lot about it. I think when Nas is on the theme and inspired and really works with a producer that's trying to get that theme out of him, because we saw him just work with another producer, and I'm not sure he really got the best out of Nas. I think this can work. So I'm really excited to see about the subject matter and theme, and if he locks in. And I said this to Brian, and I mean it's not to make a Jay Nas comparison, but I want to see if this is sort of, at this stage of where he is in his life, in his early 40s, as a, you know, sort of his 444. And looking, and more not impersonal, but looking at the world. I think Life is Good was that in a way for him. Yeah. But that was 8 years ago, and he still was in his mid-30s. And so I think, you know, this time in his 40s and where he's looking at the world and what's going on is going to be very interesting. Look, man, I'm just excited to hear some rapping.
And I want him to talk a little shit also. I also want him to remind some people because, I mean, look, getting Hit Boy is strategic to me to also because – if you're getting Nas and DJ Premier, which I think we need to get at some point, you're also targeting a very specific audience, right? You're targeting the hip-hop heads, the day ones, the people who have been there since the beginning. I think in getting Hit-Boy and aligning with him, you're not just getting a great producer, but you're also targeting a specific sound. I think Nas is maybe trying to skew younger, not younger as in the kids and try to get them to dance or whatever, but I think he's trying to get to the young adults as well. You know what I mean? Who are really experiencing through all this in real time.
Well, I think
Ultra Black kind of gives me that vibe a little bit.
Yeah, but I think the thing about that is, like, when you listen to Ultra Black, like, the production is just enough that I feel like it bridges the gap, no pun intended, in all those different demographics. Like, it doesn't sound like, and it's not the single I would have expected. You kind of hit on that beat. It's not the single I would have expected him to come out with out the gate. It's not your typical single. It's extremely pro-Black, which works at this time in that we're in. But I think him coming out with that is signaling the way it sounds. You know, Ultra Black in a way sounds like it could be like an extension into sort of Life is Good if you really think about it sonically in terms of that. And it still has, like, you know, it's not like multi-layered. It wasn't trap style, but like it's fun and light and it knocks. And
well, Nas only needs like two instruments. Like, he's demonstrated that throughout the course of his career.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes less is more for him in the production.
If that's the thing. People kill him for, like, his beat selection, I think mostly unfairly, because there's been a ton of classic beats that he's rapped over, and not just on Illmatic, because people will say, oh, they're all on his first album.
That's not
like
true.
Made You Look and All of Life is Good didn't happen. Those are incredible, like, production for the most part. But he's not somebody who needs the greatest beat in the world for a song to stand out. he is somebody who really just needs a couple of different instruments. You just loop it over the course of however long, and you know he's gonna give it to you. Like, oh, like this wasn't even the best beat that Hit-Boy put out this week. The Anderson .Paak song with Rick Ross, I think, has better production on it.
Yeah,
really maybe good. That's debatable for some people, but I think that the Anderson .Paak production, the song has better production on it. But this is the better song to me.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. So,
yeah.
No, it's I'm excited, man. I'm excited for it thematically. We're a couple days away. The next time we are here, we will be talking about the album. We will be breaking it down, looking at what we liked, maybe what we didn't like. We'll definitely be talking all about that. It's a must. We haven't really done that with a particular hip-hop project thus far this year. But this is one of these, and this is one of the artists where it's time, and we're going to do that. And so, you know, undoubtedly, man, like, hip-hop has started taking a really good turn in the last 6 weeks, I feel, where we've had some really good music, including some singles and stuff come out that I'm really bumping and enjoying.
Conway, Method Man.
That's man. Yeah, if you haven't heard that song, go listen to Conway's Lemon. And it's really all about the Method Man feature. No disrespect to Conway, who did held his own.
Conway brought it too.
Yeah, yeah.
Method Man has a verse of the year candidate.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. The first six bars are, yeah, they're just that. Yeah, it's a great verse. That I didn't see coming or expect. I won't say I didn't expect from Method Man, because I feel like the last couple of times I've listened to him rap, including he spit on Sway in the Morning a couple years ago with Black Thought, and he was ripping it. And he seemed to be really more focused, and his pen had gotten a little bit sharper. I was really impressed with him, actually. Yeah, so it's good. Oh, if you haven't heard that Nas single, go listen to it. Ultra Black was very necessary right now for the time. I know real, me. Keeping quick, everything Ultra Black.
Real quick, 10 seconds. What did you think of the Drake song? Did you hear it?
Yeah, I heard it in watching the video. I think the song is cool. I think the video will give some people, I think rightfully so, issues with commercialism. It's a Nike ad. He shoots a lot of it on a Nike campus. Kevin Durant, Odell Beckham Jr. is in it. Lil Durk has a verse in the song. It's cool. Like, the song is cool. I haven't really bumped it since.
It's Drake, so people...
Here's the thing. I haven't gone back and bumped it since, but I've probably played Ultra Black like 50 times. So
really? Wow.
That tells you a lot about...
I played it a bunch too.
Yeah, I played it a bunch. I've been riding around. I had it on like around the house doing some stuff. I played it a lot. So I've just been zoning to it. I'll probably play it as soon as we're done with this podcast. So that's it. Yeah. My thoughts on the Drake thing. Drake, we'll see with his next album. We know he's told us he's not going to ever give us the classic that people would want, because he's got to include some singing in it, which I think is disappointing, but we'll see.
Sure. You're Drake. You're the one who can move.
He can do whatever he wants.
Shift the culture.
Yeah, it's
do whatever you want.
It's disappointing, like, in terms of that,
you're
with Drake.
You're not going to have a classic album on your resume just to appease your fans who are actually going to listen to your music regardless of what you do anyway.
Yeah, I don't think...
That's a deep dive for another day, but like...
It's for another day. Drake said that on an Elliot Wilson title podcast interview a couple months back. And yeah, we can get into that another day. Brian and I had a conversation about that the other day. We can get into that another day. But Nas, Ultra Black, really good listen. Recommend everybody check that out.
I'm not paid to say.
What'd you say?
And we're not even paid to say that.
We're not paid to say that, despite our podcast being called the Ain't Hard to Sell podcast. Maybe we can get Nas to try to come up on here and talk about the album. We're working. Come on, Nas. You know you want to come talk to us. You got to come on the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. I mean,
yeah, right?
I mean, if there ever was a podcast for him to come on, this would be it. We're going to try to look, we are trying, people. We will try to make that happen. We'll see what we can do. All right, that's it for this episode of the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. Got Brian way too hyped now. Thanks again to our guest for this episode, DRB Walker, staff writer from Deadspin. You can check out the great stuff she's done, including her article Shrugging Off COVID Heart Complications with the NCAA. Really good read on that. Please continue to support us, rate us, review us on wherever you listen to podcasts, and be sure to check out all the content and episodes. We have a lot of great stuff coming back up. B, you got something to say?
And the now two-time Podcast Award, Sports Podcast of the Year nomination from the People's Choice Podcast Awards.
That's right.
Two times. You can go to podcastawards.com, vote for the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast to win the sports category. Because we lost last year, but we got in the dance. You know, we got in the playoffs. Now we want to win the championship. So you can help us out with that.
Yeah. We're trying to win. Trying to stack up some more hardware. All right. For my man, Brian Fonseca, I'm Dexter Henry. Until next time, y'all. Peace.